You're listening to Sex Gets Real with Dawn Sarah. That's me. This is a place where we explore sex, bodies, and relationships from a place of curiosity and inclusion, tying the personal to the cultural, where you're just as likely to hear tender questions about shame and the complexities of love as you are to hear experts challenging the dominant stories around pleasure, body politics, and liberation. This is about the big and the small, about sex and everything surrounding it we don't usually name. The funny, the awkward, the imperfect happen here in service to joy, connection, healing, and creating healthier relationships with ourselves and each other. So welcome to Sex Gets Real. Don't forget to hit subscribe.
Hey, you. I am so glad you're here for another episode of Sex Gets Real. My sister is visiting this week with her partner. It's their first time coming up to Canada since I moved here 2.5 years ago. So it's been really fun. And I'm really excited that she's here. So this episode's just a little bit late because we've been adventuring and hanging out and catching up, which has been so fun and long overdue. I have lots of interesting, juicy stuff for you today, mostly driven by your amazing emails. So speaking of which, I want to hear from you. If you want to send in a question, you can email me directly at info@sexgetsreal.com. Or if you want the anonymous option, you can go to dawnsarah.com and use the contact form there. I love hearing from you and I would love more emails. So send them to me. Patrons, if you support at $3 a month and above, I am hosting a book club call in December. We are going to be reading Jenny Odell's new book, How to Do Nothing, Resisting the Attention Economy. And you are invited if you support at $3 and above. So I just posted all the details on how you can register for the call and get the Zoom link and the date and the time at patreon.com/SGR podcast. So I would love to see you there. If you're down with book clubs and you want to geek out with me and a whole bunch of people from the Explore More community, check that out. So I also want to just say yesterday was Intersex Awareness Day, which is awesome. I saw so many people posting about it. Intersex folks are as common as redheads. And sadly, there is a history of horrible, painful, invasive surgeries and othering that intersex people experience and actually continue to experience. There's a lot of places in the world where invasive surgeries on genitals and medical procedures are done to babies. So if you want to learn more, one of the places I highly recommend connecting with is Interact. So you can check them out at interactadvocates.org. They do all kinds of really awesome education and outreach and advocacy. So check that out, Interact. This week, I also had a really awesome video that came across my feed, and it was titled, How to Support Harm Doers in Being Accountable. And when I went to YouTube to check it out, it turned out it was actually part of a series of videos on consent and accountability by the Barnard Center for Research on Women. Mia Mingus, Leah Lakshmi, Pyapsna Samarasinghe, Adrienne Marie Brown, and a whole bunch of other really rad folks are in these videos, which are totally free. So I'll link to that one video that I saw, How to Support Harm Doers in Being Accountable, at dawnsarah.com/EP282 for episode 282, if you want to check that out. It was a really powerful series, and I want to share a little bit about it. So one of the people from one of the videos was Rachel Herzen from the Center for Political Education. And I actually wrote down a quote that Rachel said that I thought was really awesome. So Rachel Herzen said, "A lot of how we get trained to be in the world is about protecting our own interests, being right, protecting our egos, having a sense of importance, and accountability asks you to strip some of that away. Accountability asks you to put your ego aside, to acknowledge your interrelationship with other people, and maybe not just somebody you did harm to, but an ecosystem or a cluster of people who might be involved in your life. It asks you to commit to being in relationship to people in a deep way. And then Rachel went on to say, and I'm paraphrasing this bit, that we get socialized into punishment and vengeance as responses to harm. We see that in pretty much every movie ever. And undoing that impulse is a part of accountability work, because the rush to vengeance really erodes the possibility of accountability. And that's kind of a big thing for us to sit in. A few of the other takeaways that I kind of jotted down as I was watching the videos. If we want to really create transformative and restorative communities, those communities can't enforce, normalize, ignore, or downplay abusive or coercive behaviors. And I think the rub is that most of us don't even realize how pervasive, abusive, and coercive behavior is. I mean, most of us engage in both of those things in a variety of ways, big and small, and we have to begin interrogating that. And this also really includes the ways that we lead from our trauma, expecting perfection from others, having no tolerance for differences or mistakes, not allowing for nuance or disagreement, needing everyone to be exactly as woke as we are in this particular moment, while then also really asking for compassion for our own learning edges and mistakes. I mean, that kind of like mind fuck is a part of this. And how many of us don't understand the difference between disappointment, frustration, grief, regret, and harm? A few of the folks in the videos also mentioned how culturally we're taught to smooth things over, and that that's what an apology is, kind of patting things back into place. But that really makes things about us and our comfort and the way the world sees us and trying to control that. That's not true accountability, because accountability means really taking something in and considering what we might need to do differently, and allowing that discomfort to be with us instead of rushing past it. And so often when we kind of hurry to apologize and pat things into place, it's really because we can't tolerate the discomfort of really thinking about how we may need to change some of our behaviors and our beliefs to actually do differently moving forward. Another takeaway from the videos is that when we're punished as kids for messing up, which is so culturally normalized, it teaches us that making mistakes leads to hurt. And that makes so many of us averse to owning our mistakes, because we're desperate to avoid more hurt and punishment. So then we avoid accountability. And Mia Mingus, who I adore, I've been trying for years to connect with Mia, to either have her on the show or have her and explore more, but she's just so busy doing so many incredible things, but fingers crossed, maybe someday. So one of the things that Mia asks in these videos is, what if accountability wasn't scary? And what if accountability felt easier than hiding, lying, and downplaying the truth? And I think that's a pretty powerful question. Like, accountability is always going to be uncomfortable, but what if the discomfort was easier for us to be in than pretending to be something that we aren't? And I think another thing that's so pervasive and so common and normalized is the need to be right during disagreements and conflict. That's just another way that we really damage connection and accountability, because it's our ego needing to be in control. And to create communities that are really resilient, where we really live the ethics of accountability, we have to kind of allow for discomfort, being uncertain, and not being in control. And so, like, all of this stuff really made me think about how we can move from kind of this me care, known as self-care, to me and we care. I actually, it's going to seem really simplistic and silly, but I had this really big aha moment last week around getting the flu shot. And as silly as it sounds, it connected a lot of dots for me. So for those of you who don't know, I am severely needle phobic, like really, 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 really needle phobic. I have to use numbing creams. I need like a week to emotionally prepare. I usually take the whole day off that I get blood work done or, you know, anything like that. I had a really, really traumatic couple of experiences as a kid, and that's just dug itself really deep into me. And then on top of that, the two times that I have actually gotten the flu shot as an adult, I've ended up really sick the next day. So it's just kind of how my body responds to it, I think. And because of those things, I haven't gotten a flu shot in the last 15 years. And I really, truly felt justified in my reasons for not getting them each year because I was really focused on me, my fear, my phobia, my hurt, my inconvenience of being sick. And one of the things that's really been revealing itself to me in so many ways, and this is just a really simplified example, is the seduction that neoliberalism and hyperindividualism teach us. You know, these kind of superhero narratives where we are the center of the universe. And so our convenience and our story is more important than other people's survival. And so it really did occur to me that by not getting the flu shot, I was potentially going to kill someone or make really vulnerable people in my community sick who can't afford care, who can't afford time off work and to keep a roof over their head. You know, and when I really think about that, that by me not getting the flu shot, I'm potentially costing someone a family member or housing, access to income, a whole host of other consequences that are so much more damaging to the collective and this community that I'm a part of than me being scared for a couple of days, me being sick for a day, and putting myself ahead of the people who are most vulnerable that need to be centered. So, you know, as scared as I am, now I really understand the importance of taking this action because it's not about me, it's about we. And we can apply this logic to so many things. Like safer sex practices is a really great example. How many men, particularly, but not exclusively, because people of all genders, you know, do things like this. But I also think just the privilege and the entitlement that comes with being a man inside of patriarchy makes this pretty common. How many men push to not use condoms? Because those few minutes of pleasure that they experience when their penis is inside of someone's body in some way trumps other people's feelings of safety, autonomy, trumps other people's health and well-being. I mean, imagine just how self-centered it is to think these few moments of pleasure could be a little bit better without this condom, and that's more important than the fact that this decision might mean you end up pregnant. It's more important than your emotional safety when you said this was important to you. I mean, that is the definition of entitlement. Do I feel more entitled to a little bit of pleasure or a little less inconvenience than another human being's health, wellness, access to safety, trauma, and so much more, right? And I think these questions take us into really interesting places. Does my comfort and convenience mean more than the exploitation of human beings who are manufacturing and harvesting these things that I want? What if my desire to have access to all kinds of foods and all kinds of seasons means I'm putting myself and some of my preferences ahead of the devastation of entire ecosystems, of people, you know, being exploited, child labor? And I think this kind of ties back again to that conversation I had with Nora Samaran around what does it really mean to be in right relationship with other people, with our community, with the planet. So anyway, you know, brought up a lot of questions. It's a really good video series. I hope you check it out. And it just kind of made me think about the ways that this applies to our lives in really tiny ways, but also really big ways, and the ways we center ourselves over and over again. And I hope that we can all be in a little bit of the discomfort of seeing how we've been trained and groomed to believe that our entitlement to comfort and convenience and so many other things in the name of self-care and performing success actually costs other people their lives, their homes, and so many other things. I mean, we don't have to carry the burden of fixing the entire world on our shoulders, but when we start seeing how connected we all are, it really becomes clear how each and every one of us, especially those of us with more access and privilege, really need to be doing the work to break up with ego and with smoothing things over and with control and with centering ourselves. If what we really actually want is to create communities that are healing and accountable and supportive, where we all have access, not just a few of us. Let's dive into your emails. Okay, so I received two really thoughtful notes this week, and they touched me so deeply. This first message comes from Sad Gay Millennial, who actually wrote in last year. And they just wrote to me this week, and it says, "Sometime last year, I sent in a question as I was transitioning through a very difficult time. I was experiencing confusion, isolation, hopelessness, and unbeknownst to myself at the time, I was really processing a lot of unpacked traumas. Reaching out to you was both a cry for help and also cathartic in and of itself. Hearing my question read aloud on your podcast was the beginning of a lot of healing. Your thoughtful and sympathetic response gave me information to consider, but the biggest takeaway was that when I asked for help, someone gave it to me. Thanks for being there. Making yourself available as a resource as you do has to be tiring work that tests your own boundaries. Managing effort economy, especially in the realm of emotions and our seemingly selfless desire to help others, can easily err into self-sacrifice because it can feel like we're doing a good thing. So just know that your excellence doesn't go unnoticed, and you, for you and for what you do, are so appreciated. TLDR, life's great now, and we love you. Thanks again, Sad Gay Millennial." Ah, thank you so much for the update, Sad Gay Millennial. I am happy to hear that life is great now. Receiving your note meant so much. I'm holding it close to my heart all this week. And then, interestingly, another note came right on the heels of Sad Gay Millennials. And the subject line is a thank you from a college microbiologist. And it says, "Hey, Dawn, thank you so much for what you do. I found your podcast in 2016, my first quarter at university. I was in a place of ignorance and shame around my sexual experiences, traumas, and sexuality. Due to your podcast with all of your guests and Dylan, I found valuable information for myself, but also for the people around me. Sex education and sex positivity is so important to me. Without your careful guidance and kindness, I would not be who I am today. And who I am today? I am an American college student who is planning to apply to graduate schools across the world. Thanks to your influences on my life, I'm going to be studying sexually transmitted infections. I want to help those people who are living with these illnesses that have the stigma still surrounding them. Also, to continue the message of sex positivity and self-acceptance. If I didn't love microbiology so much, I'd want to follow in your footsteps and become a sex activist. So thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful day, Sapphire." Ah, Sapphire, you've been tuning in for such a long time, and I am so glad that you've stuck with me through all of the changes. Congratulations on applying to grad school. We definitely need more sex-positive folks who can understand social justice going into academia and research so that we can make change happen not only from the outside but also from within those institutions. And a huge yay for studying STIs. More information means more choices and more options for everyone. Oh, I love it. So keep up the amazing work that you are doing, Sapphire, and thank you for being a part of the Sex Gets Real experience for so long. Ina wrote to me about being in a fat body and finding support. They wrote, "Hello, Dawn. I want to start by saying you are so amazing. Thank you for all of your hard work. I found your podcast a few weeks before your Explore More Summit this year and was able to attend. I found that to be amazing. I've been listening to every episode going backwards since finding you, and I'm currently on like episode 43. I like listening at work as it feels naughty sometimes, and I so love naughty. I also listen when I'm alone in the car. The only bad thing about listening in the car is not getting to make notes of things I want to remember or places to visit. I'm a cis woman that walks through life in a big body. I know on one episode, you mentioned a site where you could go to find body positive and sex positive doctors and therapists. I am in upstate New York and really need to find a therapist. I've experienced a lot of negativity in my past, along with abuse. I've felt well until recently when my child started dealing with a lot of mental issues, so I now have to get help as I cannot cope on my own. If you could share this information again, I would greatly appreciate it. Again, Dawn, I thank you for the work you do. I can't wait until I'm in a place where I can support your work financially. Also, I forgot to tell you, all of my friends are tired of, well, Dawn said, or go listen to Dawn. She talks about that. Thank you so much, Ina. I appreciate how generous you are in sharing the show with your friends. And that is a lot of listening to me. So thank you for writing in. I'm so glad to hear that you're looking for support too, because you deserve to feel supported, especially by someone who understands the challenges that are unique to people in bigger bodies. I'm going to have all of the links that I'm about to mention at dawnsarah.com/EP282 for episode 282. So if you're in the car when you hear this, just head there and everything will be clickable and ready for you. So here is where I recommend starting. Tristan Taramino runs the Open List, which is a directory of professionals who are sex positive and usually also kink and poly informed. And most of these folks are not haze informed or fat activists, but they are going to have a range of experiences with sex positivity. So if you want support that's a little bit more sex positive, I would go in that direction. For people who are health at every size informed, and who aren't going to like suggest to people in bigger bodies that you need to diet or something, I recommend three other places as a jumping off point. So the first is Be Nourished. They have a directory of people who are certified body trust providers. I'm one of them. And that directory has some amazing people who are really deeply committed to social justice, dismantling diet culture, healing, support, people who work with parents, all kinds of great stuff. So check that out. The next thing I would recommend is ASDA, the Association for Size, Diversity, and Health. They have a directory of haze providers, and you're going to find some doctors, some nurses, therapists, dietitians, nutritionists. Everyone who's on that directory has committed themselves to the health at every size ethos. So that could be a really good place to turn. And then finally, the Intuitive Eating Institute has a directory of people who have been certified in intuitive eating. There are loads of therapists and coaches on their website that you can find. I do think it's worth noting that not everyone who goes through that certification is necessarily like a fat activist or even social justice informed. They've just done the certification for intuitive eating, which isn't as radical, say, as like the body trust certification. So with all of these lists, you're still going to need to do a little bit of research, vet the professionals that you reach out to. If there are several therapists to choose from in your area, I definitely recommend calling or emailing them and asking them some questions about their values and their experiences. And then meet with them for a few sessions before deciding if they're a good fit. If you're in an area where their choices are more limited and you might not be able to find someone that really fits the bill kind of on paper, then I recommend writing down your boundaries when you're at home and when you're in a place where you can really feel into your needs and wants. How do you want to be supported in this relationship? And bring that to your session. You might need to explicitly say things like, I do not discuss my weight or dieting, so please don't bring those up. That's not why I'm here. Here's where you can learn more about health at every size and sizism if you'd like. Offer them some resources, but do whatever you need to do in order to help create a container that feels safe and supportive if the people that you're working with maybe aren't certified in some of these body liberation kind of paradigms. So I hope that helps, Ina, and I hope that you find someone who feels like a really fantastic fit for supporting you. You definitely deserve it. And thank you so much for listening to the show and being such a cheerleader for it too. Amy wrote in with a subject line of, I'm a squirter, but until it happened for the first time, I thought it was a myth. The email says, so a little backstory. The first time I squirted, I was with my ex on a blow-up double mattress at his friend's house. I didn't even know it was possible. And then it happened, and it made a bit of a mess. I got really embarrassed and cried. At which point, he went out to tell his friends that he'd just made me squirt. I'm now with a new boyfriend who can also make me squirt and does it a lot because he likes it, but he won't tell his friends because he thinks it's only our business, which I like. He makes me feel really good about it, but I still get really embarrassed whenever we finish and I actually look at the mess I've made. Is there any way to stop being so embarrassed about it? I get embarrassed in general about how vulnerable I am during sex because I'm very loud and I can't control the sounds or the mess I make no matter how much I try. Is there a way to make me feel less awkward with it? My boyfriend is amazingly supportive and I love him and the sex we have. But the minute I finish, I criticize the mess and the sounds that I've made in my head. Oh, well, hi, Amy. Thank you so much for writing in and for trusting me with this. I want to start by saying I am really sorry that your ex was such a shit about using your private sexual experience as a way to make himself look really cool with his friends. That wasn't okay. And I'm happy to hear you have a new boyfriend that is more respectful of your privacy and your boundaries. That's good. So you asked if there was a way to stop being so embarrassed and to feel less awkward with this amazing thing that your body does. And I thought I would pose some questions to you. If you were to touch your boyfriend in such a way that he lost himself completely in pleasure, he moaned and he screamed yes, and you got to marvel at the extraordinary beauty and power of him surrendering to his pleasure because of how you were touching him. And if in the peak of his pleasure, he came in the sheets or all over you and then was panting, glowing, happy in a spent pile of human, how would that be for you? What if, as soon as he was done, he jumped up, embarrassed, and instead of savoring all that pleasure, started trying to hide the mess from you? How would you reassure him? I'm guessing that instead of him jumping up to hide the mess or to apologize, you'd probably prefer for the two of you to just let the mess be the mess and instead feel into every ounce of that afterglow and that pleasure that you could, you know, to really be in that floaty come down after all that intensity, to know that you both could go someplace so exquisite together and to try and make it last a little longer. I mean, would those noises, would that surrender, would his orgasm and the mess he made be something to be embarrassed by? Or something to marvel at and to grin over and to just really be with? I think sometimes it's really helpful to do that mental turnaround when we're struggling with self-compassion, to take that story we have and to imagine someone that we really love and care about behaving in the same way that we do, and then asking us for help. How would we reassure this person that we love that their body is doing something amazing, that they're deserving of this pleasure? I think another question that I have is, can messiness be a part of sex for you? You know, we see this clean, sanitized version on TV and in movies because, well, one, those people are simulating sex. So fluids aren't really being exchanged. Actors aren't really getting super aroused and orgasming together. And even in porn, it often takes multiple takes and lots of prep to craft the scenes that we end up seeing. Fantasy versus reality. Depending on the parts that are involved in the particular sex act, there might be spit and saliva, vaginal wetness, arousal fluids, lube that we add from a bottle, squirting, cum, poop, sweat, tears. I mean, this is just what human bodies do when they're moving and shaking and pumping and pressing against each other and contorting and doing all the things that we do when we're engaging in all different kinds of sex. So what if messiness is a sign of really surrendering to your pleasure in ways that maybe cleaner and neater sex might not? I also think it's worth considering the alternative. Like if when you're in the throes of passion and experiencing all of this delicious, mind-bending pleasure, you squirt and make a mess, what if to not make a mess meant cutting your pleasure in half? Or in thirds, or barely feeling any pleasure at all? My guess is that pleasure and messiness is way more enjoyable for both you and your boyfriend than less pleasure and less mess. So, I mean, mess and pleasure, heck yes. And I also think some of this just comes with experience, right? The more we do something, the more we understand what our body does in a variety of positions and states of arousal, and then the more normal it becomes for us. The first time that we orgasm or squirt or are penetrated, it can be a really big deal. It can be emotional or scary. It can be new or shocking. The 100th time, it might still be really special and pleasurable and impressive and important, but it might not be quite as scary or shocking because we've done it before and understand ourselves a little bit better. That ex-boyfriend really did something shitty. So it makes sense that a part of the story you carry around the way your body reacts during certain sex acts would include some embarrassment. I mean, he violated a boundary of yours during a really intimate and vulnerable moment. Living your way into a new story can take time. You know, it's not wrong to feel embarrassed. It's not wrong to want to clean things up, but it might be way more pleasurable and satisfying to move away from some of that embarrassment over time so that you can just really savor the afterglow and be with it. The other thing I'm wondering is, would it help to maybe watch some porn where other people squirt? Especially in porn like Pink and White Productions and their Crash Pad series, or MakeLoveNotPorn.tv, where it's really about the pleasure of the people on screen and their bodies happen to do this thing, and less about kind of performing for the viewer. I think in the end, I would suggest asking yourself, how can you increase your pleasure? What would make your sexual encounters with your boyfriend more enjoyable and more fun for you both? Maybe having a little mantra that you can say to yourself when you notice your thoughts are turning critical could be a gentle way of bringing yourself back into the moment and out of your head. Because what I'm noticing is there's a vast difference about kind of where your attention is when you are moaning and making noises and in your body experiencing that pleasure. You are really in that body experiencing those things versus afterwards when you start really kind of thinking about what happened, looking and making judgments. You're in your head and you're leaving your body at that moment. I am willing to bet that if you and your boyfriend just had some loud, fun sex, you squirted all over the bed, that you'd both really enjoy flopping into the bed, sweaty and laughing, marveling at what your bodies can do together, kissing and touching and nibbling, maybe hydrating and snacking a little bit, and letting all of that pleasure just wrap you into a cocoon of yumminess and staying with it as long as you can. So what is maybe a small phrase or an invitation that you can offer yourself? Or even what is something you can ask your boyfriend to reassure you of that helps you to stay present with that pleasure and each other instead of immediately leaving by, you know, going up into your head and worrying over what just happened? It is vulnerable to be seen in this way. And it can be scary to be so utterly unmasked in front of another person. And I think that's part of the beauty of finding a partner or partners who can really meet you there and help you to feel safe so that you can do it again and again. So if there's something that would increase your feelings of safety, it's okay to ask your boyfriend for that too. It really sounds like the two of you are having a lot of fun and feeling really good together. It's normal to feel embarrassed, especially when in the past you've been shamed or used by someone else in a way that didn't feel good. It can take time to rewrite that story, but in the end, you know that mess means something really yummy just happened. And I would just try and find small ways to stay with your boyfriend and your body and the pleasure that help keep you out of your head so that you can enjoy this incredible gift. Because I assure you, Amy, most people would love to see their partner, and I'm sure you would love to see your boyfriend, experiencing so much pleasure that they yell and they moan and they sweat and they squirt and they make a mess everywhere. It's such a gift to be able to be a part of something like that with someone else. So have fun, Amy, and enjoy this glorious body and this amazing pleasure that it sounds like you're getting to experience. This final email does mention intentional weight loss and uses some stigmatizing language, so take care of you as I read it. Emotionally wrecked Matt writes, "Hello, Dawn. Longtime listener. Never expected I would need to reach out, but here we are. This is messy and complicated, so feel free to edit. A year ago, I started dieting and working out. And the physical changes have been a great confidence booster for me. The effect on my 20-year marriage, though, has been unexpectedly difficult. My wife became nervous I was having an affair. She began overeating, gaining weight, and her own self-confidence has crashed hard. Our sex life has gone downhill as well. It's become a weekly checkbox that I think she feels is a necessary activity. We'll start hot and heavy, but there's always a point where it becomes weird, disconnected, she shuts down and focuses on my pleasure. I don't believe she's reached an orgasm with me in months. It all feels very wrong to me, and I end up guilty afterwards, though she says it's okay. I thought we were working through it. I've reassured her that I love her regardless of anything, that I would never cheat on her, and that I find her desirable, which I do. But she has suggested repeatedly I could cheat, that I should find someone better, that she would be okay if I found a girlfriend. It's like she's pushing me away intentionally. Things recently escalated, though, where now my wife told me she no longer finds me attractive, that I've physically changed too much, that she is sexually bored with me. That one really hurt. And what turns her on are hot wifing fantasies. I had to look it up. She's masturbating to cuckolding porn and has shared some of her favorite videos with me. She was also enthusiastic that it was something she would like to experience. I'm not handling that well. I don't find that dynamic to be exciting, the husband on the sidelines. And when I shared my own fantasies of possibly attending a lifestyle club and taking small steps to explore voyeurism or swinging as a middle ground, her reaction was muted, jealous, and then she cried. As I write this to you at 5 a.m., because it's keeping me up at night, I'm worried that potentially living out any of these fantasies is harmful. I'm not sure how or if we can resolve this. I'm not entirely sure what is even going on between us or how to rebuild our love. Did my weight loss wreck our marriage? Thank you for any advice and for your years of helping others navigate these topics. Best regards, emotionally wrecked Matt. Oh, Matt, this sounds so painful. I'm sorry that you and your wife are in this place, which sounds really difficult. I really just want to validate that. It sounds like it hurts and it sounds like it's hard. My short answer to your question is get help. Get help from a sex positive and haze-informed therapist who works with couples if you can find one, especially because at this particular juncture, the damage that could be done by a therapist who encourages your wife either explicitly or implicitly to change her body could be terrible. You can't make your wife do anything she isn't really ready to do herself, but it really does sound like she might find a lot of ease and healing if she worked with a body trust provider or met someone who could support her around body shame and confidence and healing. It must have hurt a lot to hear that she's sexually bored. But it also seems like such a powerful opportunity for connecting and getting creative together. That kind of connection, though, requires trust and curiosity and playfulness. And it sounds like some healing and repair needs to happen before that would be possible. It also sounds like your wife feels really hurt. And in her attempts to not feel the hurt or to deny that she's feeling hurt, it's creating a wedge between you two that's becoming harder and harder to bridge. It really is going to come down to repair work. How can you two begin to repair the damage and heal the hurt that's happened? I think you're right. Diving into fantasies right now probably isn't a wise idea. Instead, I think it's important to ask, how can you two become co-conspirators and collaborate on how to move forward in ways that feel connecting and sexually playful? You need a strong foundation, and it kind of sounds like your foundation is pretty cracked right now and in need of some repairs. And repairs take work. They take time. There's going to be grief and hurt feelings. And ultimately, only the two of you know if you're up for going through that process and being in those uncomfortable places. I mean, I think there's so much more that I could say about why you losing weight increased your confidence and, you know, the normativity and the fetishization of thin bodies that we have culturally, and how that process could have increasingly hurt your wife the more both of your bodies changed. I could say so much about fantasies and the feelings that can come up when we share them, about escaping a painful reality by fantasizing about ways to abandon or hurt a partner, about withdrawing from each other. I mean, there's a lot here. Our sexual fantasies can be delicious and pleasurable and rich with ways to express ourselves, but it really comes down to the two of you taking some time, you know, to decide, do you want to do the work to repair this relationship? If you just keep pressing ahead and trying to force things, I don't think repair can happen at some point. Are you both committed to being uncomfortable, to experiencing grief, to working with someone who can help you find new ways to relate to each other? I think if the answer is yes for both of you, your relationship could come out of this stronger and more resilient than ever, because it's really these challenges that we experience that can help us to level up in our skills, to deepen in our vulnerability, to find new ways to relate, to like expand our toolkit in a really massive and impressive way. But if the answer is no for one or both of you around doing that kind of work, then another conversation might need to happen about what that means. I think one of the worst things we can do to someone we love is to decide that we aren't going to do the work to heal, that we aren't willing to give the time and the space for the repair to happen, but then to desperately cling to the relationship out of a fear of being alone, which essentially locks both of you into this purgatory of misery and pain. And you both deserve more than that. I'm so sorry that this is where you found yourself, Matt. It's possible that really long-held insecurities bubbled up as your body changed. It's possible that in the process of you changing your body, you inadvertently made comments that really hurt your wife without you realizing it. It's possible that other issues were just lying in wait and that there had been a low-level resentment kind of bubbling up. And then the body changes were the straw that broke the camel's back and have kind of become the thing that is being focused on as the reason. But perhaps some of these issues have been there for years. Now there's an opportunity. An opportunity for either really diving in and doing some work that could be uncomfortable, but potentially creating something that's really strong and resilient with a huge toolkit, or you two might just need to decide to relate to each other in really different ways. My hope is that you and your wife are able to really talk about getting some help, and that you're able to find someone who is really qualified at being able to help with your particular issues, and that you two find a way to feel less hurt and alone, you know, whether that's together or separate. I hope, Matt, that you can take care of you, and I thank you so much for trusting me with this. I hope that help is around the corner. And that is it for this week's episode, folks. Be sure to send me your questions. I definitely want to hear from you. Head to patreon.com/sgrpodcast to support the show and to get details about that book club that's coming up. Also, head to donsarah.com/ep282 for all the links that I mentioned in this episode. And stay tuned for next week's episode because I will be back soon. Bye.
You used to light up like a spark. Now you're blue, treading water in the dark.
A huge thanks to the Vocal Few, the married duo behind the music featured in this week's intro and outro. Find them at vocalfew.com. Head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show and get awesome weekly bonuses. As you look towards the next week, I wonder, what will you do differently that rewrites an old story, revitalizes a stuck relationship, or helps you to connect more deeply with your pleasure?
So don't be ashamed. Love.